The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Now, that was my problem. Let's turn it down a little bit. So one piece that I wanted to offer is that in a day like this, where we're focused on the sitting and walking practice, where we're really in the more the side of meditation practice, I think I said earlier in the day that the instructions for the practice are the same, whether we're sitting in meditation or in the grocery store or in our office, and that's true. Basically, it's, am I aware? What am I aware of? And from time to time, checking in to my relationship with experience. And yet, in our sitting meditation, we have the luxury of letting go of some aspects of our experience that it can be very helpful to let go of while we're sitting, the contents of our thoughts, the, what our minds, how our minds kind of create stories, and we can let go of some of that content when we're in sitting meditation. In our daily life, content is a big part of our experience, and thoughts are a big part of our experience. And if we have the idea or the belief that we can't be mindful of our thoughts or mindful of the content of our minds, mindful of the content of our experience, then there are going to be huge aspects of our daily life that seem like they're off limits, that they're not within the realm of where we can be mindful. And so the exploration is that it is possible to be aware of content. And one of the keys for me in this exploration was looking at, how does the content impact me? So one good place to play with this, or a couple good places to play with this, is in reading and writing. So when you're reading something, you're taking in the content of that. You don't have to be mindful, like here, if I'm reading this, right? If I were just trying to be mindful of the process of reading, it would kind of get in the way of the reading itself. And so what Saito Tejaniya talks about is a 50-50 split. Around a 50% of our attention in the content of what's happening. So the content of reading, knowing what I'm reading, being cognizant of the context of what's happening, the content and the context. And then 50% of our attention in our inner experience. How is that content impacting me? How is that content landing? So if you're reading news, for example, there can be a lot of responses that happen as we take in that content. And we're not trying to divorce ourselves from the content in our daily lives. We're trying to open to, how does content move us? How does content, how does reading the news move our hearts? What kind of emotional responses does it create? How does it make our body feel? Does it make us contract down when we read something? Does it make us contracted or open? So just seeing, how does this content that we're reading land for us? And likewise with writing. And reading is a good place to begin to explore this, because often when we're reading, we are alone. And so there's the opportunity to perhaps take your time in reading. Maybe it might be that you have to do a back and forth. Maybe read a paragraph and stop for a moment. How did that land? Read another few sentences and stop for a moment. How did that land? So that you have the opportunity to take your time with content when you're reading. and see how you're responding to each part of what you're reading. This is practice for taking in content of something somebody is saying to you. Similar, it's very similar in terms of how it lands for us. Now, it's somebody else's thoughts that we are taking in when we're reading, just as it's somebody else's thoughts we're taking in when we're hearing somebody speak. So right now, as you're hearing this, how does it land for you? Does it make you feel, oh, possibility? Does it make you feel, oh, more things to be mindful of? You know, how does it land? What happens? So the process of exploring it while reading can support your ability to be able to connect with content while listening, while hearing somebody else speak. The process of writing, connecting with the content of what you're writing, possibly the person you're writing to. You know, email is a great place to play with this. So often when we're writing, we aren't just writing the content, we have somebody in mind that we're writing to. So there's multiple things going on. There's what we're creating in our own hearts, and there may also be a kind of a recognition, or can be a recognition. So not only how is that content impacting me as I'm exploring writing this, but perhaps how might this content land on somebody else, so that it's not just about my inner experience, but how might somebody else read this? So this is beginning, again, it's looking at the content. How is it taken in our own experience, and how might it be received in somebody else? So this is a good practice for beginning to explore mindful speech, being aware of the content of what you're saying. How does it feel as you're speaking it? Are you cognizant of how it might land for somebody else when you say it? So this is an area of exploration that we don't get as much practice with when we're sitting and walking. We tend to put down reading and writing when we're in meditation mode. We put down speaking and listening more when we're in meditation mode. And so this is the next step with this practice, to exploring how do we be mindful when content is involved. How do we keep from getting lost in the content? So any comments, questions, descriptions of things you noticed today? We have about 20 minutes left together. Yeah.
You spoke on this before, just before we sat here last, and just I'd like you to comment a little bit more on it, maybe just briefly, about because I can take this practice, like Leonardo, much too seriously. So just maybe a couple more thoughts on being playful with this.
How can we be more playful? How can that we tend to at times take our practice really seriously, and how might it be possible to be a little more lighthearted about the practice? It's really helpful to be able to laugh at ourselves as we explore our minds. We see our minds going into patterns and habits and going into all kinds of contortions to do things. And the more we look at our minds, the more we can kind of take a step back from believing the importance of what our minds are doing. You know, I think that's part of the shift around not taking practice so seriously, is that we can begin to let go of believing that what our mind is telling us is so important. And we can also begin to kind of get amused about what our minds do. Over and over again, it does the same thing, you know. It's like, I sometimes say our minds have no shame. They just launch into their thing. And as we begin to be more mindful, more aware, we can see those launchings and not take them so seriously. You know, that not take the way our mind kind of does its stuff so seriously. And even begin to laugh at ourselves. That actually, something, I don't know who said it, but somebody said it's good to be able to laugh at your mind, because then you'll be endlessly amused. So there's that aspect of our minds, you know, doing all the kind of junk that they do. And part of the reason I think we take the practice so seriously is because we start to see how much that junk contributes to our suffering. I mean, it does. It absolutely contributes to our suffering. So we see that. And it can feel a little heavy. It can feel like, oh, you know, look, this is my own mind that's doing this. How can I get my mind to stop this? And partly, we have to take it a little more lightly. You know, that trying to get our minds to stop something is just yet another version of aversion. It's just another aspect of not liking, wanting to get rid of. And that kind of taking it too seriously kind of can hook into that, either aversion or greed. You know, either a version of, this is really important that I get rid of this anger. I've got to figure out how to get rid of this anger, and bringing anger to the process of getting rid of anger just supports more anger. So we have to recognize that. We have to recognize that actually taking things a little more lightly supports us. How to take things more lightly is kind of an interesting question. Partly, I think, in my own experience, just looking at the mind over and over again, the mind just stops taking itself so seriously. You know, it sees, oh yeah, it's doing that again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and oh, look at that, it's happening again. Oh, and again. And we see through this process that we don't have a lot of control over it. It's conditioned. And so we begin to let go of the ownership. I think that may be part of it, is that as we let go of the ownership of our habits and our patterns, as we let go of the ownership of I'm the one who's going to do this practice, as we let go of the ownership of I'm going to figure out how to be such an enlightened being, that ownership kind of makes us take things more heavily, take things more seriously, because I'm the one that has to accomplish it. I'm the one that has to do it. So if we begin to, as we begin to recognize that our minds just do things, you know, we're watching, we're paying attention, we're noticing things, and boom, habit explodes. There it is. I didn't do that. It was conditioned. We begin to recognize we don't have as much control. And so in some ways we can't take it so seriously. I mean, we can't own it in the same way. I think that's something I'm coming to as I'm talking, that the taking something seriously is connected to owning and identifying with. Yeah. So the more we practice, the more we see that ownership and identification is counterproductive, and just another thing that's arising, actually. So something more to be noticed. So, you know, one thing you can explore is just recognize, oh, taking it seriously is happening. There's that again. Taking it seriously is happening.
Read the book of Buddhist.
Read what book?
The book of Buddhist humor out there.
Oh, yes.
You know, this is really hysterical sometimes. I could tell you 20 things right now, but I won't do it. But, you know, come here and, you know, go to the potluck and talk to people about your practice, who are, you know, because it's pretty hysterical, I think. Yeah. I think talking to others is very important for some reason. Very alone thing, and we all skulk out of here. You know, it could be very alone, and I think that would I wouldn't be here if that were just for that myself.
So. Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you, thank you, Cheryl. Yeah, Tim, pass the mic over.
In watching my mind go off into thoughts. We usually think of it as the thoughts sort of drag us away, or at least that's the way I've been thinking of it. But I've been noticing that there's sort of something that builds up. If I'm keeping mindful for a while, it's a tension. I don't know whether it's a sensory fatigue or maybe the next level in, you know, the recognition fatigue or something like that. But it's almost like a barrier is developing slowly as I'm trying to be mindful, and I feel this sort of tension. I don't know if other people have felt that.
So that's I felt that, and my understanding of that phenomenon is that it generally indicates a little too much effort into the practice, so a little too much trying to be mindful. A little too much application of energy. So when that kind of tension builds up, sometimes it can be interesting to check in, ask the question, oh, how much effort do I actually, or how little, let's ask it that way, how little effort do I need to actually make right now to be present?
I have been trying to do a very light touch with it, and it's still... comes back.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times we do have the habit. The habit of over-efforting is so strong that even trying the light touch, we may be over-efforting. So sometimes consciously backing off, you know, it's like, yeah, it doesn't feel like I'm making much effort, but let's see. You know, let's see if I can make less effort. Okay, and then back off. And sometimes I find, actually, I can really back off. As the mindfulness... through the day, as the mindfulness strengthens, you know, even if it's, let's see, I've used this analogy before, but sometimes the way we make effort is kind of like the effort we need to make when we're riding on a scooter. I haven't ridden on a scooter in years. But, you know how you put one foot on the scooter and then you tap the ground on the other to get the momentum going? Initially, on that scooter, you have to tap the ground pretty frequently to get the momentum going. But then as the momentum builds, it actually is counterproductive to keep doing that light tap over and over again, because the momentum of the scooter is going to carry you, and you you just need to ride for a while and then put your foot down again as it slows down a little bit. So you begin to learn, as you're riding that scooter, how much tapping of the ground you need to do as you go. And in this practice, initially, we do have to remind ourselves more frequently. You know, okay, am I aware? What am I aware of? Am I aware? What am I aware of? As we go through the day, we probably need to remind ourselves less, because that momentum builds up. So it's kind of playing with backing off. It's really the art of meditation, learning how to put our energy in, how to apply our energy. So learning how to back off. And sometimes for me it is just, okay, how little effort do I need to make? Can I make less effort? just kind of like relax and stop trying to be mindful and see if the mind wanders. Often it doesn't, actually, when there's a little bit more momentum going. That can be a fun, again, this can be a playful way to go. Rather than taking it so seriously, I have to be mindful all the time. Let's see what happens if I stop trying to be mindful. What if I stop trying? Wow. Seems like I don't have to try as hard as I thought I did. And then if you stop trying for too long, of course, the mind will wander off and then you need to begin again. But it's kind of like, you know, on that scooter, you begin to learn when you need to put your foot on the ground to give yourself a little more momentum, because you get the sense of what wobbly is. You get the sense of what when the scooter's going to fall over. You know, you get a sense of that. So you know you need to put your foot down and tap again. Kind of similarly, what happens in meditation is we begin to get a sense. Initially, we need to give it a little bit more momentum, reminding ourselves pretty frequently. Am I aware? What's obvious? What's obvious? Kind of checking in pretty frequently. And then we begin to see, oh, okay, actually I can hang out for maybe 5 seconds without, just kind of hang in that space of mindfulness without doing anything. Watch how the attention naturally takes things in. And then we start to get familiar with what does it feel like for the mind to be wobbly? What does it feel like for the attention to be a little less clear or sharp? And then reconnect. It's kind of like with, if you want a nice tone out of the bell, you know, you can strike the bell. And then there's this resonant sound. You kind of ride on that resonant wave for a while. And then it's diminishing, so to keep getting it, you know, ring again. If I'm going to doing this, you know, it gets kind of annoying. So it's learning how to tune. You know, it's like, it's that connection with, oh, this is, what am I aware of? That moment of connecting, oh, what am I aware of? It's kind of like hitting the bell. There's a kind of a natural resonant quality or a kind of an arc of mindfulness that follows from that meeting of mindfulness with the experience. And we can sometimes just ride that wave for a little while, and then it begins to diminish. Ooh, then connect again. So it's an art form. And I still get tired in meditation, and sometimes it's simply about tiredness. Ah, here's another piece. How much time do we have? Not much. Sometimes what happens is as we get tired in meditation, we're trying to do something with our minds. So actually what's happening is tiredness is happening. This was happening to me in the last sitting. The mind was pretty exhausted. I've been teaching a lot this week, and so result, you know, it's haven't had a lot of sleep, so pretty exhausted. The mind can know that exhaustion, can know that state of whew, and just hang with that. If in that state of tiredness, exhaustion, which can come after a day of practice, you're trying to do something with the mind, like, oh, connect with hearing, oh, connect with body experience. If there's a directing of the attention to something, whereas what's actually happening is this tiredness, what's actually most naturally being known is this tiredness. If you're trying to do something with that mind, except know that tiredness, it will exhaust you. It will make you even more tired. So you could go back also to just seeing, are you trying to do something with the mind other than just know what's actually happening right now, which is tiredness is happening. It's the end of the day. Okay, tiredness is happening. So those are two sides of it that we can be over-efforting and sometimes be actually trying to do something, have an agenda to pay attention to something that's not the most obvious thing happening in our experience. Our agenda can override the obvious. We don't have the sense of, yes, I can be aware of dullness, of sleepiness, of tiredness. We have the habit of saying, if I'm dull, sleepy, tired, I'm not meditating properly, so I need to wake myself up. I need to pay attention to my breath. I need to connect with the experience. And that is exhausting to a tired mind. So that's another place to explore. Yeah, one last one.
On now. Okay. So the business about content, paying attention to content. So it was interesting because I was noticing it in the walking period earlier in the day, that it's quite easy to connect with content, awareness with content with the five senses, but when it gets into thinking, awareness is aware of the process of thinking, but the content of the thoughts, the track is lost, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's like, then it becomes a question, is awareness a process like thinking? but rather than even pose that question, the question is, is it possible to bring awareness to the content of thinking?
It is. It is possible to bring awareness to the content of thinking. It feels different. Mm-hmm. When we're in meditation, our attention is kind of more interested in the phenomenal nature of experience, and it turns its attention to thought and knows it as a phenomenon. And the content just is not important. It just kind of vanishes. So it takes a different relationship to thinking to be aware of the content of thinking. But it is possible, and you can actually practice with this. Like right now, think the thought, my name is whatever, and be aware while you're thinking that. That's possible to hold the content and the awareness at the same time. It's a different experience. It's like it's a slightly stepped back mindfulness. It's not, you know, right in with the thoughts as a thinking process. It's a little bit more removed. And so it's not something we tend to cultivate. That capacity is not something we tend to cultivate in sitting meditation or in walking meditation. So it is a terrain that is kind of unique to our daily life practice to begin to explore that. There can also be a kind of a way. Sayadaw Tejaniya sometimes talks about this, that a way that we bring our mindfulness to thoughts that can be a little over-vigorous. It's like he talks about shooting thoughts. Oh, there's a thought. And it's like the way we aim our mindfulness at the attention just makes it vanish. So it's kind of a little bit less focused, a little bit more stepped back. So it's an exploration. And I think if you practice with reading and writing, that slows down the process of thinking a little bit so you can play with, read a sentence. Can you be aware of the content of that sentence while you're reading it? Or are you just aware of black on white on the page? You know, can you actually be aware of the content while you're reading it? So play with it and see what happens. It is possible. I will say that. It is possible, and now it's for you kind of to explore, play within your own mind. That possibility. So it's time to stop. So I'd like to offer a dedication of merit for the day, and then if you'll just hang around for a minute after that, I'd like to see if there'll be a few people who'd be willing to help with the cleanup of the SIST center. May the beneficial results of our practice together today not be for ourselves alone, but be shared outwards with all beings that we meet, all beings seen and unseen. May the benefits of our practice ripple out and benefit all beings everywhere. May all beings be happy, healthy, safe, and at ease. May all beings know the deepest happiness. Thank you for your practice today.